Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another episode of The Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week, I talk to visual artist, creative director, Amy Hood. Wild story, wild stuff. Because she's a visual artist, I urge you to check out the link in the show notes so you can kind of see what she's all about and then see where all that dark stuff comes from by listening to this podcast. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a musician, a podcaster, a filmmaker, or if you just make videos on your phone, check out Future Moments on the App Store because they have an app that'll make your life easier. Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes for links. This is good, another drinking episode.
Yeah. I mean, I do like a drink.
Do you?
I do.
You big drinker?
Yeah. I don't want to be as much. Like, recently, I haven't been wanting to drink so much just because I feel like the time passes by so quickly as it is. Mm. From year to year, and it makes me so anxious. Mm-hmm. Just because there's so much that I want to do, and it just happens more and more rapidly.
Time is moving faster.
Yeah, time is moving faster each year, I think. Yeah. And part of the reason I think that is because, you know, the segment or the duration of a year is a smaller and smaller percentage of your life because you're continually gaining years, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds like math. Yeah, each year is a smaller percentage.
Right, so when you're 6, a year is a much larger percentage of your life than when you're 35.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And therefore, the perspective of time is maybe shifting so much, and that's why it seems to go by so quickly. Mm-hmm. and at a more rapid pace.
You've actually brought mathematical logic and rationale to a theory that I've heard throughout my life.
But really?
Yeah, it makes sense, actually.
Yeah, that would be my theory.
Well, now it sounds logical. Mm. So you're a visual artist.
Yeah.
And you have books and prints, and you directed a video that was written up in Rolling Stone. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, you know, this is a podcast audio, but you're... your work, your visual work is really dark.
Yeah, it is.
It's really dark and very erotically charged.
Yeah, there's some of that in there.
Okay, and there's like some cult Charles Manson kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, one of the books.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So it really makes me wonder, what happened to you?
I'm a really dark person. I'm very optimistic. Uh-huh. And I am generally really energized. And I like to consider myself to be a rather warm person. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of darkness in here. And to be honest, I think that's relatable. I don't think life is a romantic comedy. I don't think it's realistic. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes to feel really what it means to be happy or grateful is to have seen the other side. In fact, I have another theory that is depression helps you develop a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and I've had a lot of that.
If you can channel the depression into humor.
Right. Or, you know, it just happens so much so long sometimes, then you're just like, what? And then you just have to start laughing because what are you going to be? You can't just sit there and mope around,
mm-hmm.
you know, even though sometimes it feels really hard to get going.
But a lot of people do mope around.
Yeah. You know, there's a good phrase, I think it was by Martin Luther King, that he said, if you can't run, walk, and if you can't walk, then crawl. Uh-huh. And some days are just crawling kind of a days.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Do you feel like your work is an outlet for your depression?
I don't think about it as an outlet for my depression at all. I think that there are important topics that people feel as a sensation that are not as much talked about. And that's sort of what I like to talk about in my work, even though with, you know, the nudity or what have you, that's not really the forefront of what my work is about at all. Mind you, I'm totally for being representative of a woman being sexy and intellectual at the same time. And I've advocated for that for a while. That being said, sometimes it's not as clear just how much thought and how much depth there is to these things that I'm outputting because of, I don't know, perhaps the oversaturation of content, perhaps the short attention span, and perhaps the nipples. But, you know, but there is a lot to it. And,
yeah.
And there's really an underlying theme throughout all of my work that I'm hoping with the next few things I'm prepared to work on over the next couple of years will become very much more apparent. And then retrospectively, everything will have a little more weight to it for
people. I hear a little bit of an accent.
Oh, I get that a lot.
Yeah. Oh, where are you from?
I'm from Florida.
You were born in Florida?
No, I was born in Montana.
Montana. You grew up in Florida?
Predominantly.
Uh-huh. Where in Florida?
Kind of all over. My family, my mother was born in Tallahassee, and my father is from Sarasota. He still lives there. My mother lives now outside of Pensacola, which is where I went to middle and high school. And my grandmother, she still lives in Tallahassee. She was, she worked for the Democratic House of Representatives for years, is now retired and super active and bubbly.
Uh-huh.
She's super cute. She's uh-huh. really...
Pensacola is kind of a military town.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. My stepfather was in the military. He was a cryptologist for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've been there. I've played shows there, and there was a train that just kind of went through town with
oh,
all
Oh, you've
this...
been there.
Yeah,
yeah
I've been
it's
there
a funky
times.
Place, huh?
It is a very odd place.
Nice
yeah.
beach. But Florida's a weird place. It's kind of like a black hole. There's like a weird vibe there.
Yeah, Marilyn Manson is from Florida.
Oh, of course he is. All the weirdos are from there.
Yeah. So do you think growing up in Florida kind of informed your dark expression?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it. I mean, part of it... yeah, I've been through some crazy things, and part of it was growing up poor on one end. My parents were divorced.
See, I caught that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love how information trickles out because you said where your mom lives and where your dad lives.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, they must be divorced.
Yeah. I mean, I did live in a couple other states. I lived in Virginia for a little bit because my stepfather was in the military. So we did travel a little bit, but I always came back to Florida to visit my father anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So percentage wise, once again, I would say, up to the time I was 18, I had spent the largest percentage of my time in Florida, which is why I say I'm from there.
Right.
It's a funny thing. Everybody in New York asks where you're from.
Yep.
So that's the answer I have. For now.
Until
I have a larger percentage elsewhere.
Oh, right.
Right.
But you're kind of done. Are we done growing up? Are you saying you're not done growing
that's
up?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's the whole thing. If you were done growing up at the age that you are now, then what's the point in continuing?
Yeah. Okay. I like that. It takes the pressure off.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
I'm still growing up.
Yeah. You're still growing up. It's so funny. People, I know, I have a lot of friends who are like, their late 30s and their 40s, and they're like, oh, I'm so old. I'm like, really? Because I'm pretty sure, like, you could double your lifespan and that person is still alive. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And you would have lived the entire life that you had already lived, like, that span of time.
Yeah.
Again, you know, but doing other things because you're just building on it. So
right.
That's cool.
But even
about
more
getting older.
Absolutely. But even more because our adult years should count more than our child years because we have.
Theoretically. No, I think that they do because you're gaining experiences.
Mm-hmm. And you're making your own decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think as part of the darkness kind of comes from a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It comes from a lot. And also comes from the kind of person I am. I'm a very sensitive person.
Mm-hmm.
I absorb a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I absorb information well. I absorb sensation a lot. And that's perhaps part of why when things have happened, I just take it in and think about it again and again and again and again. I'm an overthinker.
Overthinker, yeah.
Yeah.
You analyze.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I try not to get too self-absorbed with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can be a self-absorbed in a negative way, certainly, right?
Absolutely.
When people think about self-absorbed, they think, oh, that person thinks they're so great. But it could work the opposite.
Well, I think there's a fine line, or maybe it's a thicker line, between analyzing and obsessing.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes that crosses over. But if you can exercise it,
mm-hmm.
then you stop thinking about it so much.
Do you remember the last thing you felt like you were overanalyzing?
Everything. I really do. I really.
Coming to do this podcast?
No, I didn't overanalyze that because I like you and you're a warm person and it felt genuine and I didn't think that there was any, there would be anything that might make me feel bad later.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So,
another
there
you
one
go. Tricked. Yes.
Yeah.
So you said growing up a lot of bad things or crazy
well,
things?
Well, just, and I say growing up, I don't just mean early childhood. Like my dad was, he was really poor,
mm-hmm.
you know. My mother was middle class, but in debt.
So how does that work?
there's almost a poverty there. Not really, but you have food and you have a lot of, an increasing amount of stuff. I can't even stand to go back there because it's just like.
She's a hoarder?
She's not a hoarder per se, but that's a whole another conversation. It really is.
Uh-huh.
It really is.
But you feel like the economic status and.
I think it kind of started there. I would say because my dad, he used to work as a drafter for an architect,
mm-hmm.
For years, and then he was an alcoholic though.
Mm-hmm.
So and that kind of runs in that side of the family, an addiction to things. So there's like a lot of little things there.
In your dad's side of the family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My uncle died last year. He was like homeless, living on the street, like had a stroke.
Your dad's brother?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. My uncle Alan, who was a brilliant surveyor.
Mm-hmm. What was his drug of choice?
Vodka.
Vodka. Mm.
Yeah. Like a lot of vodka. And that's as far as I know. I mean, maybe there were other things, but that's what I know about. But I mean, we used to all live... in this one bedroom apartment, like my brother on my brother, I have five brothers and sisters, right? But my brother who shares the same father, mm-hmm. and then I have an older sister who shares the same mother and father.
Mm-hmm.
So it was us three there. And then my other siblings lived with my mother because they shared the same mother and not the same father.
Right.
Right. Okay. We're following.
Yeah.
But we used to live there and he couldn't afford to put us in daycare. And so, I would just be there. We'd just be at the house all day long, shared the room. You know, I'd cook, I'd clean. It was expected for things to be well maintained.
At what age were you cooking and cleaning for?
Seven. Yeah.
So you're kind of caretaker.
Alone
right
in
away.
The house. Yeah, I had a lot of responsibility at a young age, which my father always kind of prided me on.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why he's had a very, I forget right now what the word.
Caring.
I'm looking for it. No, no, no.
Nurturing.
No, no, no. It's not nurturing. It's more like.
Dark and crazy.
No. It's more like diligent or like self. Motivated.
Oh.
Self-motivated.
At
I've
seven.
Always been extraordinarily self-motivated.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. He used to pride me on being self-motivated at that age.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of stuck, I guess.
I wonder, not that you weren't, but that would be a great thing to tell a kid anyway.
Yeah. No, it would be.
Mm-hmm.
It would be. It's a good, it's a very practical skill to have, especially in an entrepreneurial based culture.
And which you are.
Which we have right yeah. now.
And you are.
Yeah.
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 So,
it's a lack of stability, but positive affirmation for the right qualities.
Right. Well, as an entrepreneur, you kind of have, you're not ever told what to do. You just have to.
You have to have yourself like, you have guidance, I guess.
You have to figure out what's to do next.
And find out a way to learn how to accomplish the things that you're trying to do or yeah. acquire the skill set that you figure you might need.
Right. Proactive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's that.
It's not for everyone.
No. No. Not at all.
Yeah. I think some people are happy just going to a job and being given a set of tasks and doing them.
There's something nice about that too, I think. I don't think I could ever really do it
mm-hmm.
that way. I'm a bit bossy though, so maybe that's why.
Are you?
Yeah, yeah. My friends would think so.
Are you, well, if you are taking care of a household at seven, maybe you're used to being in control of things?
I am, yeah. I mean, we were homeless after that too. That was the first time I was homeless. I've been homeless a few times.
As a kid?
No, growing up, even as an adult.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of that was the first time, and we lived on the beach.
What age were you living on the beach?
Maybe nine, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, nine.
With brothers?
With my, it wasn't for very long,
mm-hmm.
because then we came up to Sarasota. We were living in Naples at the time. We came up to Sarasota and crashed with my uncle, the one who died last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he had lots of vodka bottles, but he was a sweet, sweet man. Mm-hmm. He was really just such a warm, sweet person who just had a lot of problems.
Do you remember going from house to beach? Like what that looked like?
Yeah. I mean, my, sorry. So we lived in another apartment. So we lived in the one bedroom apartment and then we moved briefly into this, two bedroom apartment. My dad had a lot of anger problems. Oh, goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Like he would just flip out. He just had rage. He had so much rage that his reactions were strong. It was a very strict household too, because he was in the military for a second. It was a super smart guy, just super unhappy with his life.
Yeah.
And a really unhealthy way of kind of manifesting it. But it was very strict. Like, weren't allowed to watch TV. Like, you could only have ice cream, like, very occasionally. Absolutely no soda. Like, things like that. And,
Big yeller? Would he yell at you?
He wouldn't yell at me.
Mm-hmm.
He would yell at my brother
mm.
a lot. He was actually somewhat abusive towards him. Not really physically as much, but he would really take out a lot of his anger on him. And, or for example, I recall specifically this one occasion where he had been cooking dinner like all night. He was really good at cooking. I learned to cook that way too. Sort of intuitively, like where you smell things and you pair. And it's like poor person's cooking.
Uh-huh, right.
It's kind of an iron chef, but for poor people where they're like, all right, you have can of soup and pepperoncinis and, you know,
right.
go.
Figure out what to do with these
exactly.
ingredients.
Exactly.
That's kind of fun.
Well, yeah, and I learned to cook that way. And we had a lot of, you know, eggs and potatoes with like frozen ground hamburgers for dinner,
mm-hmm.
which I was like so hungry. So of course it was
yeah.
delicious at the time. But he had been preparing this dinner all day, all evening, which was late. I think something happened where like a piece of glass, I think he had put down maybe the pan, an iron skillet, and like the lid broke into it. Maybe he put it down too hard and it broke. And then he just flipped out.
Mm-hmm.
He threw that shit like around and then he got the vacuum and like it was like one of those shop vacs, like a metal shop vac that you roll it in, and he was vacuuming it up and he was so pissed and he like beat the hell out of that vacuum cleaner until it didn't work anymore. Like metal vacuum cleaner. He was a 6'4", strong guy. Like,
militarily trained.
Strong guy. Like, yeah. He, you know, used to be, like, a surveyor. Really, like, MacGyver kind of guy most of the time. Like, super practical. Like, if there was a zombie apocalypse, you know, he would know how to survive.
Right. So you felt protected?
Well, I took the practicality out of those qualities, I think. There's a practicality there that he did have, and he was smart, and he would be happy to talk to you about, like, the Big Bang Theory and all these different things, but he was just so unhappy with his life, I guess. Anyways, so that was the last place that we lived.
Well, as a guy, especially a military guy, I imagine he's, like, a little machismo or tuned into the traditional elements of being a man, and if he can't care, like, support his family, he's struggling with that. That just, like, gets right at the core of...
Well, he didn't want to have kids.
He didn't want to have kids.
No, he didn't want to have kids. He married my mother because he had my sister. And then my mother kind of, you know, stopped taking her birth control, and that's how I came around. And
do you know this for a fact?
I know this for a fact. My mother has told me this.
She has.
And then he was in the military. He wanted to be a civil engineer. And then he had kids and he couldn't pursue that. Mm-hmm. And then he wanted to be a pilot in the military, in the Air Force. And he had bad vision. And at the time, it wasn't particularly, like, it wasn't super as correctable. Like, now, it's, you could go get your vision fixed at a relatively affordable time. You can't use contacts, I think.
Oh, really?
I think when it comes to being a pilot, you have to just, you can take laser surgery, got later, but at the time he didn't for some reason, and he was upset about that, and he went AWOL and all this other stuff. But point being, I think it just didn't go the way that he wanted it to, and it sat with him for a long time.
Right.
And he just didn't let it manifest the right way.
Do you remember what it was like when you had to move out of the two-bedroom apartment and your dad had to tell you, I guess, hey, we can't afford this apartment?
He was always angry, and he would just yell about it. He'd blame the people who had the complex about raising the rent. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, it was probably like $800 a month, which was a lot for him, but for me now living in New York, I'm like, right. What? Two-bedroom apartment for $800? That's a steal.
Yeah, and you don't even have any kids to support.
Exactly. I mean, fuck. But there was even this guy who used to drive around the apartment complex in his golf cart. The guy, he's like this big, obese man with glasses, and he was a bit of a gross guy, and my dad hated him. He hated him so much. He slashed his tires one time. He did. He went over there and he slashed his tires and he drove away. And we used to drive in a 72 Plymouth Fury.
That's like, a real car?
That my dad got for like $600, beat the fuck up, but it got from point A to point B.
A Plymouth Fury sounds like a perfect car for an angry man.
Yeah, well, it was. And it always smelled like old cars, and I still like old cars to this day. And anger. And beer, because you drive and drink a beer.
So, but do you remember having to...
I mean, we packed up the stuff in the moving van, and we just took the moving van to the beach, essentially, because that was, he really liked to go there, and we spent a lot of time there. We'd go from early in the day to late at night. Mm-hmm. I just play on the beach. I was a real beach bunny.
Yeah.
and I love the water, and I still consider that home whenever I go back, going to the beach and being in the ocean. But, yeah, I mean, I guess he just didn't know where else to go until he could figure things out. He didn't have a phone. We didn't have, like, cell phones at the time. You know, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
So he just had to figure out what to do, and we were kind of just waiting.
Were you always a creative person?
Yeah, I think I was. I never thought that I would have a career as a creative person. In Florida, there's kind of a lack of culture, and it's not like, yeah, I could be an artist.
Right.
It's not like that. I was going to be a chemical engineer. That's what I had planned to do from the time I was 13.
How did you end up in that? Was that something that was around you?
Art or chemical engineering?
Chemical engineering.
No, you know, I was always, I did really well in school initially. Until a certain point, but that's a whole nother thing too. It's a whole other story also.
See, that's such a running theme on this podcast, is that people that live in places like Florida or Ohio, they're just not around art or creative things.
It's just
things.
Not, it doesn't exist there.
Yeah, so you don't
obscure
even know.
Reference, you know, like all these things just don't exist. You have to find it.
Right.
I had to teach myself all these things, you know. And I was going to go to school for chemical engineering. I was good at science. I liked it. I knew that it was a career field that you could make money at because it has so many applications, because chemistry, like, it applies to fucking everything. I could make patinas for metal. I could make lipstick. I could make, you know, all it has. So everything's made of plastic.
Yes.
So, I mean, I knew that I could make money doing that. And I knew that I was good at it and that the world needs more scientists. So mm-hmm. why not? It made sense.
Yep.
I think science is kind of like imagination applied to mathematics. You know, you have to be a little bit of a visual person to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed to make sense.
Yeah. Well,
I was like, the idea of being a scientist. I thought I just liked that.
Maybe it started with ghetto cooking.
Yeah, right. Ghetto cooking.
Poor people.
Jesus Christ. Poor folks.
So do you remember the first time that you were subjected to something creative or artistic? Music was first.
Music was first. My dad did always, he always played. He bought me my first guitar, which was an ESP LTD F200. Uh-huh. Metal is a motherfucker, owned by, like, it was like the guitars that Metallica played on. So
that's very Florida.
Yeah, it's very Florida. I learned to play guitar first. It was so expensive, but he bought that for me because... Mm-hmm. He just, I don't know.
Had you shown an inclination to music?
Yeah,
or just...
I was always very musical. I think being a musical person is a very specific quality.
What is that quality?
Music is its own language, right? Mm-hmm. That which is not able to be communicated with words.
Yeah.
It's a feeling. It's a sensation. It's communicating.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to pick up on that, and not everybody does.
Yeah,
not everybody feels the way that it's communicating it or understands the language that it is.
Yeah, you're conveying an emotion
yeah.
in this very abstract kind of musical way.
Via notes, but that's the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny that way.
Because
it's not the lyrics in a song that make you feel like the song means something.
Totally.
It's the music.
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that from interviews, and that musicians, not all of them, of course, but musicians in general are not as good of an interview as, say, a stand-up comedian who's used to using words and...
To describe things.
Yeah.
But if you ask that musician to play you a song for your podcast instead, they might have a better time communicating what they felt.
Absolutely. And, I mean, I might get lashed for this, but I think music is, like, kind of a deeper art because it transcends language.
Yeah, sure.
You can
yeah.
move people. You can make people feel something.
And I hope I don't get lashed for this either. I would argue, and I've been thinking about this lately. I was actually talking with Avtar, whom I know you from lately, is that I think that people, and I say musical people because not everybody who's musical is necessarily a musician. They just have that relation to music the same way.
Yep.
Right? I don't consider myself to be a musician anymore. I used to play, I played the viola actually first, before I played guitar. When I was in third grade, I played viola. And my great grandmother was an organ player for a whole life. So I think it was well ingrained.
It's a part of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was the first artistic kind of outlet. But I would argue that... there is a certain amount of intelligence that comprehends music. For example, people who are musical people tend to have generally a higher sort of intelligence. Please.
But how do you measure intelligence? I mean,
retract that if it sounds super fucking offensive.
Well, intelligence is kind of ethereal. It's an ethereal concept because some people could be really smart at, like, say, making money, but they're terrible at social interactions or relationships.
Sure. I'm not saying it as any kind of specific intelligence. I'm just saying it represents maybe a higher amount of brain activity or maybe... yeah, maybe it is brain activity. It's a higher amount of brain activity. It's a larger...
that's actually quantifiable right there. So that's good.
It's a larger capability to understand deeper feelings.
Yeah.
Right? Which I associate myself with a certain intellect.
Yeah.
Right? People who can't, you know, who don't think of things a certain way or very much at all are not inclined to feel very deeply about them, I would almost argue.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you are very musical if you analyze things and think about things.
Yeah, sure. A scientist could certainly... I'm not saying it's like the end-all be-all, but I'm just saying that they might... I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a semi-theory.
Yeah.
It's a semi-theory. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, it was just like started to kind of like, well, what I've noticed is I get along with people, you know, with X, 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 Y, you know.
Right, a certain brand of person.
And why is that, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not just a certain kind of person, all kinds of different people. But what is the quality that they have mm-hmm. that makes them get it?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
People get it or you don't get it. And those people who get it tend to be musical people.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you do have a scientist thing happening as well, which I've been catching.
I know.
So, all right. So you got this guitar and did you actually start
Yeah, playing and learning? I was metal as fuck. I played for a long time.
You did?
Not like a super long time, but I switched to bass. Yeah. I played metal. I played a lot of different things mm-hmm. though, too. It was like, you know, you go through periods.
Did you drop your E string to a D? Like real?
Well, de temps en temps. Like sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I like that whammy bar.
Uh-huh. Did you play in bands?
Well, I played bass in bands. So yeah. I grew up, you go through kind of these musical periods of time, which I, like, it's funny about music, is somebody can play you something, and to me, like, or play me something, is like, if I don't relate to it at the time that they play it, then I don't get into it.
Right.
But it could be a couple years later that it jives, like, for me, and I'm like, God damn.
Timing.
And, yeah, well, it has to relate.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why people, when they're sad, they like to listen to sad songs mm-hmm. about heartbreak if they're heartbroken.
Some people like to listen to happy songs when they're sad, and I never understood that.
Yeah.
Like the happy song will get them out of the sadness.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like coffee, I guess.
Right, a little pick-me-up.
A little pick-me-up.
Just stuff that sadness right down. Get over it.
You're like, I'm going to get out there today.
I don't care.
I'm going to go talk to people.
I'm going to put on a smile.
You look great. You look great. It's going to be okay.
Because I'm happy.
So it's just a lull. It's going to be great.
Clap along if you feel.
I'm going to wear sparkles today.
So I heard you speak some French. Did you live in France for a little while?
No.
You did? Okay.
No. 6 months of high school French and a hell of a lot of French films. Well, not a hell of a lot, but a several.
Uh-huh. You picked up a couple phrases or?
No, I it's more so the pronunciation that you might pick up. I think that if you don't already know French, I pick up languages pretty well. If I went to go study it, then I could speak more fluently. I really speak very little.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand it fairly well, and I can certainly read it much better. But, you know, it's Latin-based. It's much easier to read. It's harder to hear.
Yeah, especially when it's fast.
Yeah, especially when it's fast and heavy on the accent.
Mm-hmm. So you're playing. So at what age did you start playing bass?
Okay, so you go through some different genres of music, depending upon what's relatable. You know, when I was really young, I'd like to hear what's on the radio, which at the time was in the 90s. So what was on the radio was generally better.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, I would sing along to songs. And then I learned the viola when I was in third grade or so. And then I got the guitar and it was in metal and I was like,
bleh. Uh-huh. Was your dad proud of you for playing metal?
I think he was. I think he liked it. My dad doesn't talk about pride or being proud very much. He's very, it's not like a super warm family on either side, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was not particularly affectionate, but, you mm-hmm. know, I'm sure he did take some pride in that.
Are you close to them?
No, I haven't seen, I saw him once last year when I saw him for the funeral of my uncle, it was the first time I had seen him since I was 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You're not in touch with him anymore.
I had only seen him that one time when I was 16 since I stopped seeing him when I was 13.
You broke off communication with him.
Well, yeah. I mean, I kind of talk to him sometimes, but he's very narcissistic. Like he would just totally forget my birthday. No, I know that sounds dumb, but...
No, that doesn't sound dumb at all. You'd think you'd remember that day if you had a child.
Well, I mean, yeah, but he's just too... I think because he didn't get the life that he wanted to live earlier, he kind of started to do that later and became much more about himself. And really, like, if there's any communication now, like, he'll send an email out to, like, everybody in the family telling them about, like, his accomplishments most recently.
Huh. Right. And it's not about what you, how are you, what are you
up to? It's never like, how are you, what are you up to? You know, that doesn't mean he doesn't care altogether, but that's how it is. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to waste my time. Mm-hmm. So it's like that, but it's fine.
Was it a big thing? Like you said, hey, I want to not have you in my life for a while. Or did you just kind of...
I left. My mother had happened to be visiting South Florida at the time. And, you know, actually, you know what happened? And this is part of the reason I sort of stopped playing music a little bit. Is that I had a guitar. I had an acoustic guitar there. And I think something happened to it. I think he either crushed it because he was drunk, or he sold it for money, or something happened like that. And he just said he didn't know what happened to it, which is absolutely ridiculous. I left it on the couch. It's only been like 8 hours or something.
Right.
Really? Like, it just is gone now?
Yeah.
Like, so...
Do you think he sold it?
I think maybe he broke it. I don't know.
You didn't even
see
it?
I don't know. I don't know what happened to it, but it has suspicious circumstances.
Yes.
And anyway, so genres of music. Okay. Heavy metal. And then slowly, you know, in Florida, with the radio there that it is, you move into rock and roll kind of type things. Mm-hmm. Rock and roll being a very wide fucking genre, might I add.
Yeah.
But, you know, radio stuff, you know, Zeppelin, like all that kind of shit.
Classic rock.
Get into it. I had like go-go boots and like my hair was like long and my boyfriend at the time had like big red hair and like he was a very talented musician actually. Used to be a saxophone player, then was a kick-ass drummer. And then, of course, he wanted to play guitar because it was the center of attention, which is ridiculous because he was such a talented drummer.
And women love
and it's hard
drummers.
To find. It's hard to find talented drummers sometimes. Yep. You know, mm-hmm. He was really kick-ass. And he also played keyboard, like really kind of a very musical person. Like, mm-hmm. And so, I would listen to those kinds of things. And then I started to get into reggae a little bit. I really dug reggae. Mm-hmm. And at the same time I got into reggae, I got into jazz on a rainy day.
Yeah.
Like Django Reinhardt.
Uh-huh.
And so then I started playing jazz bass when I was maybe 15.
Is this why your dad
excuse me, not jazz bass, reggae bass.
Was your dad really pissed at you playing reggae? Is that why?
No, no. I stopped seeing him when I was 12 or 13. And then I also,
do you remember the last conversation? Like, how does that work when you just decide
to... left.
You left. Your mom was visiting and you just...
I just went with her. I left. With my sister. We just left.
Why were you living with
him? Because I wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, but why were you living with him and not your mom?
I spent a third of the year with him for visitation rights.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's what the court decided?
Yeah, that's what the court decided.
Yeah. I come from a divorced family as well.
Yeah, so I spent all summer with him and then most holidays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So at 13, you were just... had enough. You just went to live with your mom. And did you tell him, like, listen...
I already lived with her pretty much, you know?
Right, right, right. But you said, I'm not going to go back to
just,
his...
I was very... I had a job already at 13. I've been working since I was 13. And very independent. I moved out of my mom's house when I was 16.
But couldn't he say, hey, I have the law on my side, a court order, you have to come stay with me.
I don't think he would argue that with my mother for the sake of it, but I don't think he really cared that much. And I think he was, I think he does care. I think he was heartbroken by it, but I don't think he was going to fight it.
He didn't want to force you to do something you didn't want to do.
No, that's not it.
No.
No, that's not it. What was it was just that I think, you know, he felt like he really... his pride was wounded from like poverty, you know, he was like rooming with somebody at the time, this guy named Joey, who I liked a lot. And he really helped me kind of get out of there too, because he saw the way my dad was. And he's a sensitive guy too, though. My dad is a shame because, you know, he felt bad, but He was ashamed. Mm-hmm. I think he was ashamed, and he didn't want to fight it, and he knew he couldn't really provide.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't, I mean, food was hard to come. It was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough, and I think he felt bad about it.
Maybe your
mom. He quit his job, I think, because he was so angry one time. He just said, fuck you, and walked out, you know, and he didn't have a job really, like a real job. He was, I don't know, figure modeling, I think. Because there was an art school down there, and it was like figure modeling. Part of that fed his ego, and part of it made a little bit of money, but like it was weird.
Right.
All this shit's real weird. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you don't want your dad being a figure model for a college.
I don't, I mean, I don't care what somebody does, as long as they're happy and it pays the bills.
Right.
You know?
Well, I'm hearing that you have a lot of empathy towards them, but then also...
Life is hard.
Yeah.
Life is hard. I'm not angry at him. I probably was at a certain point, but I'm not. I mean, to each their own. I don't know. Life's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm empathetic for people who go through that. I think as long as you're trying to make a fucking effort for yourself, like I said, some days are crawling kind of days.
Yeah.
Right? As long as you're really kind of just, even if it's a slow chip, but you're chipping away.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Do you have any tricks or tools that you do when you're having a crawling day?
A drink.
I don't believe you, actually. Is that true?
I do. I drink for several reasons. It's a lot of...
Does drinking help kick the mood?
It helps me not feel so much pain. And also helps me get out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
It helps me not feel physical pain, I should specify. And it helps get me out of my head for a second. Because I'm such an overthinker. I'm just like, I exhaust myself thinking about fucking things.
Right.
I truly do. And I'm like, so tired. And then I'm like, get the fuck out of your head. Read a book, watch a movie, go talk to people that hopefully care about you.
Right. Yeah.
Get out of it. It's a self, stop being so self absorbed.
Do you isolate a lot?
I spend a lot of time alone. I don't mind to, but it gets weird in my head. And I know that it's because I've just like been sitting here and like my little, you know, rabbit hole brain.
Uh-huh.
And I need to stop doing that and stop thinking so much about myself, because there are so many people and so many other circumstances. First of all, my life's been much worse than what it currently could be considered. I'm not just talking about now or just in general, whatever. And then there are a lot of people who don't even have the fucking luxury to complain or to think so fucking much about how miserable they are. And that's what I think about.
Yeah, but comparing yourself to someone worse doesn't really make it different.
No, you know? No, it just starts to shake you up a little bit enough to be like, all right, you know what I can do? I can go out and I'm going to get like a sandwich because I need some blood sugar.
Right.
And I'm going to go look at some art today or whatever it is, you know?
But as far as dealing with depression or anxiety or however you label it, it's good to have tools to know, to have go-tos of what to do. You know, like obviously being more social is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Exercising, jogging, you know, just
even
running.
Even yoga, if you need something gentle, just start to stretch, just move around a little bit. Sometimes you don't want to do, you know, a high intensity, like interval training workout. Sometimes you do.
But
sometimes it'll kick your ass and you'll feel fucking great afterwards.
Yeah, well,
and you have to push yourself to do it.
Right.
Sometimes you have to be gentle with yourself and you have to do gentle things for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that doing printmaking or other artwork that you do is helpful?
Yeah, you know, I just always wanted to do that. I love the prints. It actually has taught me a lot of patience. And working with metal. I've been working with metal recently. And it's taught me a lot of patience. They're actually architectural studies, the prints. They're not random.
Okay.
They're not just randomly designed. They're studies of mid-century interiors.
What does that mean? What does that mean? You're looking at buildings?
Yeah, so... Well, I'll find images of like Frank Lloyd Wright or Gordon Mata Clark. I love him, or Corbusier or something. And then I'll sort of Corbusier is a little, I don't know. What do you consider mid-century? But
something in the middle of the century. I don't know.
Yeah, it's bigger than mid-century,
right? Of
really,
course,
as a interval of time, but whatever, nonetheless,
it's like a modern Renaissance mid-century.
Well,
your printmaking, I did notice that their shapes are kind of architectural. There are a lot of shapes. They're very different than your video work.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I think some of the so there's a line of consistency in the concept of all the work.
There is,
yeah, and that is sort of revolving, I'm working on things. I need some of this for my summary for my shows that I'm trying to play.
Right. As an artist,
I don't want to give away too much.
You need a thesis? Is that what they call it?
Well, I have a thesis. And I'm almost hesitant to give it away just because I haven't gotten there yet.
Right.
I want to talk about it. Like, I would be happy to tell you about it, but I'm still paranoid a little bit.
Of what?
Of the idea being out before I had the opportunity to execute
it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Then don't tell.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's an underlying thing, and it'll come out soon.
Okay. So you have a show coming up?
No, I don't have anything confirmed right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working on a lot of, not a lot as in bulk, but it's just a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I'm working on some things. I'm shifting, because I did the books, and I really love the books. But at the beginning of this year, I was like, it's really not apparent enough what it is that I'm trying to communicate with people. Because I think
you have
very
so
much,
many different mediums.
Well, no, because of nipples, I suppose, or because of what it is, it's not.
What do you mean by that?
Because there's so much content saturation in current culture right now,
mm-hmm.
that people say it's erotically charged. They just see erotica.
Right.
You know, they don't see, okay, this book is called Cult Classic. It's not just about this Manson-style cult, but that is a narrative depiction of what this theme is kind of revolving around, which is the worship of something and why and what the mentality and the psychology is behind that. Even though there are analytical essays embodied within the book, mm-hmm. that is the theme that I'm exploring within that book. It's like, and cult doesn't apply, yeah, sure, physical cult, applies Manson, why would people do that? But also, like, celebrity-induced cults,
right.
like, which is super common now. People like to follow things. Like, what is this fucking mentality behind this? That's where I made
right,
the book.
The cult of personality.
So each of these books and each of these projects that I output, and really the music video, was because Greg Dooley from the Afghan Whigs loved that book. And it just narratively suited his song.
Right.
All this work, you know, is really thoroughly, like, psychologically analyzed and thought through. And I'm like, how can I make these things that I think are important to explore with people? And really, and sometimes, you know, there's been, okay, with darkness, which is something that I like to talk about that a lot of people don't talk about genuinely.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important, especially with the way that people are relating to each other, interpersonal connections, technology. There's been a lot of depression. Maybe it's because of oversaturation of things, like all these fucking things. Mm-hmm. And like, those are the kinds of things that I want to try to address, and not in a negative way.
Right.
Because I think that there is an evolution to going through the spectrum of feelings when you're living your life. So I was thinking at the beginning of this year, how can I make that? And how can I make that kind of thing more apparent? How can I make what I'm really intending, like, through this as an entertaining sort of medium, but also probing, you know? I make it entertainment as a format.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So to communicate these ideas. And how do I make that more clear? I need to make it more immersive, which is why I started doing sculpture, because I want to build installations,
mm-hmm.
because there is nothing more impactful than being fully immersed in something.
Do you feel misconstrued, like misunderstood?
Often.
Yeah. You feel like in the erotically charged stuff, that all they're taking from it is the eroticism?
Yeah, and I'm not going to hate on eroticism. I won't take it back.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I can execute what it is that I'm planning,
mm-hmm.
Then the work that I have made previously will make even more sense in the way that I intended to.
Right.
Yeah.
See, this is the intellectual part that's different than being a musician. Because
yeah.
as a visual artist, you have to kind of form your thesis and intellectualize all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's what's similar to stand-up comedy, I think. It's a very intellectual...
You have to explain yourself, per se.
Yes, in words.
Yeah, in words.
Yeah,
sometimes.
You can't just plug your bass into a distortion pedal
yeah.
and slam on it.
Yeah, well, the people who are, the audience is a little different, you know.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
Yeah, but that must be frustrating, feeling misconstrued and misunderstood.
I've been used to it my whole life. You know, I've lived a kind of crazy life, but nobody knows, but it's fine.
Well, yeah, because you don't come across that way. You come across as very together.
Well, and that's fine. I am a very together
person. Is that an insult?
No, not at all. Okay. I'm a very together kind of a person. Some people think the opposite. People think that I'm, I don't know, promiscuous, I suppose, or whatever it is that, you know, people perceive. The thing is that you have to think about the perception of other people. And
do you, though?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I do in terms of obviously people who are close to you think about the way that they think and how they feel. And I don't really, there's a line, there's like a fine line between not giving a fuck about what people think enough that you could actually live your life and do your thing and really just do it like earnestly for what it is that you believe and what it is that you think about the world that you're experiencing and the universe that you have in your head.
Right, but you
because
can
go, everybody has their own.
But you can go crazy like that. Like when people are put in solitary confinement, it's kind of a form of torture.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to form
yourself.
Well,
we're social people, aren't we?
I think so.
And so, and it's more than thinking about the opinion and the thoughts of the people who are close to me. It's thinking about how my work is perceived by sort of people in general.
Right. So if it's being perceived in a way that
and it's
you don't...
not being perceived enough that it means I'm not communicating effectively enough to the people
that's
in
how
general.
That's how you're taking it. You're putting it on you. That's which
yeah, you know what, it's kind of my responsibility to communicate what it is that I'm trying to say. And if I find if I'm feeling that that's not effective enough, then maybe it's time to find another way to make it effective. It's like branding almost.
Right. Like, you know, like a stand-up comedian that the audience isn't liking, if the audience isn't responding, if a stand-up
he's gonna
comedian,
tell a different joke or hopefully. Tell it in a different way.
Right.
You know, you can't just I think, you know, all the things are still the things I want to communicate, but I need to make it a little... Sometimes it has to be obvious for people. Sometimes they don't pick up on the subtleties.
Right.
You know?
Or sometimes
even
you could...
if I market it that way.
Right. Well, that's the challenge of the artist. I mean, you have to present it in a clear way, which can be hard because you're not objective about it.
Yeah.
That's the challenge.
What are you going to do?
Well, you're just growing up.
Yeah, every day. We're all just growing up.
Exactly.
We?
So do you ever feel wanting to be in touch with your dad? Do you feel closure with that?
Kind of, yeah.
You do feel closure?
Kind of, yeah, to be honest. I understand what it is. I mean, I hadn't been back as an adult until last year.
Right.
I went back as an adult, and I'm like, I saw it for... I saw it for what it is.
You see it more clearly as we get older. I think we see things a little more clearly.
Isn't it funny when you have an inkling for something and you don't know it's correct until one day you're like, I know for a fucking fact that this, I was totally right about this.
I think that's my favorite thing about getting older.
You're like, well, because the naivety, it's like being on a trip or like drugs or something, and then you come back as. Like, a little less naive, much more sober. You're like, nope, that was a totally logical deduction to make about that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, good for you, naive self. You know, like, you did it, even though you were naive and you know nothing.
Yeah. Does your mom talk to your dad?
No.
They don't
God,
speak.
No.
Okay, even because they share children.
Yeah, fuck, no, they do not talk.
You do still talk to your mom?
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I talk to my mom.
Are you close with her?
Well, we had some problems when I was growing up. She has a terrible depression.
She does. Okay.
Oh, terrible depression. But she's very well intending. She's got her own issues. She also has anger problems, and
when you say also with your dad,
they're both angry people. Yeah, so it's surprising that I mean I have been very angry in the past, But I'm not actually a very angry person.
You don't strike me as an angry person.
I don't feel very much anger. Mm-hmm. When I get mad, I get mad.
Have you heard that saying, anger is just sadness turned outward?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I think that's the saying.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe it or not. I've just heard that saying.
I think it manifests in a different way for me.
Your
self-destructive,
sadness.
Maybe. Maybe that's the way that my anger takes itself out.
Oh, instead of outward, it goes inward.
Yeah.
Self-destruct.
I don't blame other people, you know, like, it's not their fucking fault.
Right.
And it's not my fault either, really, but I'll sacrifice myself, at least, so that I don't interfere with other people's lives. That's the mentality of self-destruction, I think, for myself.
Yeah. What does your self-destruction look like? Is that the
drinking
too
a
much?
Lot? Yeah, smoking a lot. In fact, I want a cigarette right now. Do you have any?
I don't, but we're almost...
Okay.
If you could hold off a little more.
Yeah, wow. I only told you half my life story, not even the rest of it.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot there. Uh-huh.
What's the first thing on your mind when you say there's a lot more?
At least coming back around to where it makes sense, where I am now versus where I was then. Mm-hmm. It almost seems random or like I'm jumping. There's a segue. It's missing the middle part.
Yeah, well, you left your dad's in Florida to go to your mom's in Tallahassee, Florida?
She lived outside of Pensacola. I lived with her predominantly, went to middle and high school. She was kind of abusive when I was growing up a little bit. I moved out when I was 16, worked at a gas station in Florida until I saved up enough money to move myself to New York, and that's how I got to New York.
Wow, what age did you move to New York? 16?
18.
18?
I was living on my own when I was 16. I had been working since I was 13, saved up enough money to move out by the time I was 16.
Did you finish high school in Florida?
Yeah, I finished high school.
So you lived on your own.
I almost had a scholarship, but because of the family stuff and like also health things, at that age, I didn't. By the time my last couple years of high school, I ended up like fucking up my grades because of all these things that were happening. I still graduated, but it fucked up my GPA enough not to get a scholarship anymore.
Where did you live from 16 to 18?
I lived in Milton, Florida, a small town.
Did you have your own apartment?
Yeah. There's more to it than that, but yes.
You lived with a boyfriend apartment. Or something?
No, well, I did, but I supported him.
Oh, yeah. So how did your mom feel about you moving out at 16?
Well, I asked my stepdad.
You asked him?
Yeah, because he was always a super calm, lovely, stable man. Mm-hmm. Perhaps he even enables my mother to react the way sometimes that she does.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, you know. But I asked him because I know that if I had his support, then it would be okay. Because she is so emotionally unstable that you don't know what you're going to get if you say something like that.
So it doesn't really...
It'll upset her. Because it's not that she doesn't care. She's just like, the way that it's coming out is just not, you know?
Yeah, but that doesn't nurture honesty from you. You're not like, I could be open.
The whole thing was, bubbly... Or not bubbly, it was like rocky. The whole thing was rocky.
You're on eggshells.
Well, she was the one that I was having a lot of trouble with. And so I was like, look, I how it is with me and mom and how things are happening. I want to move out. And he's like, where are you going to go? And I told him. And he's like, all right.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever help you out or check in on you?
Yeah, no. I still talk to him and I still talk to my mother even, you know. They're occasionally, I mean... I've still seen my mother. I don't have a problem with her now.
Yeah.
But I realize what it is now more so. I mean, even the last time I visited, it was like clear. Some of the issues that I have in my life, like where they stem from.
I always say that's kind of one of the best reasons to stay in touch with your parents is to see what to watch out for.
Mm.
You know?
No, my stepfather was always fortunately a very like the stable person. Mm-hmm. You know, or else I would really have no sense of stability and then I wouldn't know what to do. I would, but it's tricky because the things that I desire are very basic things, but I don't know that they're basic things because I have no point of reference.
Right, right.
Things like that.
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Well, you don't have a role model except for maybe your stepfather.
Well, no, my grandmother on my father's side she's been to all seven continents, super adventurous lady, like valedictorian, smart, like powerful, 6 feet tall. Like
she's still around?
Yeah, she's like volunteering in a national park out west.
Cool.
You in touch with her? There's a couple of people like that. My aunt married in my uncle's ex-wife now, but she was always really lovely growing up. It's not like, I'm not going to just whine and say anything. And, you know, I can't say that. And I can't say that both of my folks, even though they're fucked up, like don't have positive qualities.
Right.
That I will take or that I didn't take from the experience that they've had, even though, you know.
See, you're not angry.
I'm not angry.
You're not an angry person.
I'm not an angry person. Yeah. I get frustrated. Uh-huh. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
I get frustrated. Sometimes. Most of the time, I'm very optimistic. And I would like to give energy to other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We all get frustrated.
In a way that kicks their ass in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little prodding?
Not prodding, just like, get yourself out of it and rah, you know?
Do you do that for yourself?
Sometimes. Not as much as I do for other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. If I took all the advice I gave, I'd be
Yeah, right? Really, really You'd be happy. Sad.
So sad.
Totally. You cannot accept that. Go out there.
Well, it's easier to see
and
other
get
people.
Get what you want. Yeah. It's easier. Objectivity.
Objectivity. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay, so you're 18. You lived on your own from 16 to 18 in Florida.
Taking a lot of acid at the time.
Oh, acid in Florida while working at a gas station, huh?
Well, not while I was working.
On the off hours? Oh, yeah. What were you doing at the gas station?
Working the night shift.
Mm-hmm.
I'd work the night shift. I'd work 9 to 7, and then I'd go to high school.
9 p.m.?
9 p.m. to 7 a.m. Yeah, yeah. Wow. And then I'd go to high school during the daytime. I was a punk at the time.
Uh-huh. When would you sleep?
After I got out of school,
mm-hmm.
before I went back to work.
Wow.
And, you know, you don't work every day. You work maybe four or 5 days a week.
Right. So you're doing that. You're paying your bills, paying mm-hmm. for the rent.
Yep.
And then when did you realize you wanted to move to New York and why?
Oh, I always knew I wanted to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
I knew. I always knew. I was like, I think this is a modeling opportunity that came up.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
How did a modeling opportunity come up?
I was doing some small modeling with an agency down there.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go to New York every year, once every spring, I think. And meet with agencies and try to get their girls signed if they were tall enough. And I was just barely tall enough for them to
include me. How tall are you?
I'm 5'8".
Okay.
Yeah, barely. But there was a couple agencies that were interested, and one offered to buy my plane ticket. And I was like, well, hell, that's enough of an investment for me.
Mm-hmm.
Little did I know. At the time.
Was it a scam?
No, not at all. I just should have probably gone with the other agency. They're much more well-reputed.
Uh-huh.
But I left anyway, and oh my God. I was so nice. I had never been to a big city before in my life.
Yeah. So this modeling agency bought you a one-way ticket?
Yeah. They bought me a one-way ticket.
What were they thinking? You're an 18-year-old girl. They're buying you a one-way ticket.
Yeah, they bought me a one-way ticket there. And I mean, that's not uncommon in the industry
really?
At all.
Had you decided that you're just going to move to New York at that moment?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I wanted to get out. I was like, sure, yeah, whatever.
Had you saved money? Did you?
Yeah, I saved up $2,000.
Wow, that's like almost a month's rent, I mean.
Well, I found a little 3 foot by 3 foot
closet
room rental in Astoria.
Uh-huh.
And I lived there with a guy who didn't turn out to be so nice after all. And then, you know.
Had you known him?
No. God, no. I was so naive. Oh, my God. I was so naive. It makes me cringe.
Yeah.
I would not even be so bold now as to do what I did. I was so bold. I just did not give a fuck. I was like, I'm going to go. And of course, it's going to work out.
Isn't that kind of the advantage of youth, though?
Yeah. I got to New York. I was like, I need a job. I'm going to go out and get a job.
I can do it.
And I did. Yeah. I walked the fuck out there. I went to Soho because of that. What is it? Ruby Soho, the song, Tim Armstrong. Oh, Rancid.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was like, I'm going to go to Soho. It's cool. But I had no clue that Soho is like a shopping mall at this point.
Right.
No idea. Just none. Absolutely. First stop I made, I waited for the... I had never taken a train before. I waited for the train. Like, you know how it runs every 5 minutes?
Yeah.
I did not know that. I was like... I didn't know the. It was the last stop on the Astoria train at Ditmar. It's like the end of the queue. We're both there. I didn't know they could both go to the same place. No idea. I was like, I had to wait for the end train. For the end train.
Yeah.
Or else I might go to the wrong place. I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
And got off at 34th Street, Herald Square, like, just dumbfounded.
Were you overwhelmed by the city, or were you like just so confident that you're gonna get what you came here for?
I didn't know what I was coming here for, really. I just knew that I wanted to get out, and I did.
Right.
You know, that was it. And then everything else was just absorbing. You know, everything else was just learning not to wear flip-flops in New York City, and like,
don't let a rat run on your leg.
Simple things. It was, I cringe at how naive, so naive.
Yeah.
I don't even know how I functioned. Like, the perspective of culture, like, oh my God.
Well, I think sometimes that naivety kind of, it serves us.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess it did its job.
Because you don't have that second guessing happening.
Maybe also I could have done better had I had more knowledge, but I can't take it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? So did you come to New York with a goal, or was your goal just to get out of Florida?
It was simply to get out.
And so you showed up in New York and you're like,
I didn't know, because I wanted to go to school for chemistry. That didn't work out. I just had left so much darkness to encounter some more, obviously, because New York has plenty of darkness that you might fall into.
No, there's darkness in New York City?
Yeah, it's, somebody turn the lights out.
Really?
Here? No.
There can't be. 8.5 million people in a small little island?
There's no way.
So how did you, what was your first job? Like, you had $2,000.
I worked at B-Bar off of Bowery.
Mm-hmm.
Then I worked at the Tribeca Grand when it was still the Tribeca Grand, and I was just like waitressing.
Yeah.
And modeling. I saved up some money that way. And then I met this photographer upstate, and I worked with him, and, you know, we fell in love. I put that in quotes.
Right, because who knows
what
love is?
You can't see my quotes on the podcast, but I put it in quotes.
Feel the air quotes.
Can you feel the air quotes? And no, it's not that I didn't know what love is. It's just that it was like, that is a whole nother situation.
Uh-huh. Is that a whole other episode?
That's then? All of these things are actually just entire episodes of me talking about my life.
Who is the photographer?
Jonathan Leader, okay. Which is, I only say that because it's evident through my, if you look back far enough on my Instagram, It's obvious. And so then he's like, come move upstate. This is in Woodstock. Come move upstate, which is how I'm familiar with Woodstock.
Right.
Come move up. I'm like, no, I have a job. Like, I have to have money to pay my bills. Like, what do you want? And he's like, if you live here, then, you know, you don't have to worry about it because I have a place here.
So you moved from the city up to Woodstock.
And I moved up to Woodstock.
How old were you at that point?
18.
Wow.
I had freshly minted 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
How old is he?
41.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think. Maybe 40 at the time.
Do you, looking back on it now, as a couple of years have passed,
yeah.
Do you feel like he took advantage of you or manipulated you?
There was a lot to it that was fucked up, but I don't regret going at all.
Right.
In fact, I probably would never have realized I was an art director almost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would almost argue that I would have found something because that's just the kind of person that I am.
Yeah.
But he was the one who really exposed me to the industry, to be honest. And as much as certain things happened there that were a little fucked up, like, I probably would have never started designing books. And if I never started designing books, I would have never became an art director, and et cetera, et cetera. Like, all this knowledge that I gained, it wasn't just from him. I mean, just the fact that we had hundreds of books around, and I just had the luxury to look through them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always worked. I worked up there too, but like, it was the first time in my life that I really didn't have to hustle.
Do you still talk to him?
Not really. I will occasionally ask him a question. We have a little bit of beef, but
yeah,
that's separate.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I guess it is to say, like, everything has a weird way of going.
Making sense?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I went there and I just learned things. And all that, like, I'm so grateful for now. Yeah. I love to live there. He had kids. I love those kids. Oh, that's a lot of stories here. There's a lot of stories. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. It feels weird to say so much about myself.
So how long did you live up in Woodstock for before you moved back
Almost
down?
4 years. And mm-hmm. then I moved back down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't gotten to live my life yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I never did because I was just so, you know, I was just working all the time. And then I moved and then I went up there and I was kind of alone most of the time up there. We had friends, but like I didn't have independent relationships with mm-hmm. people really. And then, and I just, you know, I worked and I built a company. We had a company together. I built that up and, you know.
Is that the company Viscous?
No.
Viscous Publishing.
Viscous is my company.
That's
so
yours.
It's like the second publishing company that I've started.
Mm-hmm. And Viscous publishes books?
Books.
Graphic novels?
Books and printed materials.
Okay.
And I, you know, I made a print. So I don't say just books because
right.
not everything's technically a book.
Right.
Although I do consider them books instead of magazines because they're not periodical that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're made with the sole intention. And I don't call them zines either. Zine culture was something that happened here, which I was told, because I lived upstate, totally unaware of. And then it kind of found us because we had this company.
Right. It's more like an art
piece. And people
piece.
Were like, oh my God, you guys make zines. And I was like, what are zines?
No, zine doesn't qualify what Viscous does.
No. It's very, I don't know, it's very specific.
Mm-hmm.
Zines are like quick content material and mine are like long-term. You know,
yeah, more like
here is more almost like an essay, you know, mm-hmm. but it's not an essay. It's a book. I don't know.
Yeah. An art piece almost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like an art book. Like an art book.
Where do people find these?
They can
books?
Find them online at www.viscousltd.com, which is a website I need to redo, but they're available there.
Yeah.
A couple of places here and there that carry them sometimes, but. It's better to buy online.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you, I mean, you have all these different artistic mediums.
Uh-huh.
What do you feel like is your main, like, what gets you out of the bed in the morning? Is there a particular?
Metal sculpture.
That's
And design engineering things.
Design engineering?
Yeah. I have this object that I designed. It's rather simple, but thoughtful.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to hopefully come out soon. Debating on whether or not I want to have a show with that. And that kind of acts as a transitional piece so that, like, if I just came out with, like, oh, by the way, I'm having a metal sculptural show, then people will be like, what? I thought she made books. So it's kind of a transitional piece
right.
So between the two. It abridges.
You have a lot of different outlets. You were a model for years?
I'm not a model.
Uh-huh.
I did that for money in the beginning. I'm not a model. I don't want there to be confusion.
Right.
Because of Instagram and all that shit. I'm not a model.
Uh-huh.
I'm a creative director and an artist.
And a video director.
Yeah, well, same thing.
Creative
direction.
Okay, right.
I make things.
Yes. And you have a very strong aesthetic.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
Like someone would
and
hire
consistently
you.
Strong.
Consistent, exactly. Yeah. That's what I meant, really, actually, was consistent. You have a consistent aesthetic, which is probably why Greg Dooley from the Afghan Whigs reached out to you.
Yeah.
He wanted your aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah. My aesthetic.
Oh, was there a bit of that?
He really wanted my ass. No, Did not he? At all. Not at all. Uh-huh. He was always really lovely.
And professional.
And I was happy for the opportunity.
Yeah. But I urge listeners to go to one of your websites, AmyNicoleHood.com.
That's my prints. I got to put some more stuff up on there. Mm-hmm.
You have so many different... So what? ViscousLTD.com? Okay.
I have a publishing company.
Yeah.
And then I have fine art.
Yeah.
Pretty much how it breaks down.
Right.
Right. And for money, I do art direction and stuff. And I've done things for brands, and including my own.
Your Instagram is kind of the portal because you have the links to all of them.
It kind of makes a little sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Hoodwinked. That's my creative direction.
Right.
Company.
Yes.
Right. Design stuff. It kind of categorizes all of my work in a way that seems commercially marketable.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have my namesake website, which is fine art.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I have one separate for, you know, the publishing things. And it's kind of its own site.
Are your mom and dad kind of up to date with what you're doing?
No.
They're not.
Oh, no. No. I mean, my mother knows what I kind of do. But where she is and where I come from, there's no conception of what the fuck creative director does.
Right.
Like, that's not a job. What does that even mean?
But you know? when you're modeling.
A job title, like, what?
When you're modeling, she must have known.
Yeah, she knew about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think she intentionally doesn't Google me. she doesn't go about it, I'm sure, for a reason.
Uh-huh. When you talk to her, does she ask what you're doing, what's new?
No.
No?
Not really.
Has she seen any of your artwork?
She says, how are you? I mean, she knows I make prints, and she knows I make things. I don't know. We're not, like, super close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, occasionally. If I have a nice picture, sometimes I'll send it to her, but...
Are you going to send her a link to this podcast?
Yeah. I'm sure she would be like, excuse me?
Would she be like, what's a podcast?
Yeah, she might. Uh-huh. She'd probably be like, what is a podcast? But like, you listen to it? No, she probably wouldn't. I try to watch nice films with her. Even like this film, this Wes Anderson film came on the show, and she's like, I don't know about that. I'm like, are you kidding me? What are you watching, reality TV shows? This is a Wes Anderson film. At least it's
right.
It's commercial enough for you to appreciate it's good filmmaking. Still, like, it's a great in-between. What is your problem? I don't want to watch Hoarders.
Right. She's not an artistic person where you can get on that.
She is an artistic person. She just refuses to, I don't know, aspire to anything.
Or she just lives in Florida.
Yeah, well, that too, but it's more deep-seated than that, as it would be.
Yeah. But are you finding, like, you're dealing with your life better as you have more and more outlets?
I don't know. I live for making things. I live for my ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I live for that. Really.
This is a common question or a common thought that a lot of artists have, but, like, do you feel like it's an outlet? Like, is it a blessing or a curse to be creatively driven?
That's a cheesy question.
Thank you. Well, like, sometimes, like, is it a burden or is it an outlet?
It's all there is.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's just no other option. What am I supposed to do?
Right.
Like, I have to make things. So there's nothing else for me to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's just it. I know other people do other things, but for me, like, there's just nothing else.
But some people don't have that drive.
Yeah.
Do you envy that?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I am what I am. And other people will live their lives as they will.
Yeah.
That's all. That's why everybody is a little different.
Yeah.
Because if everybody was all the same, then the world wouldn't work.
Right.
Well, excuse me, I should specify, the society wouldn't work. In the way that it does.
It wouldn't be as interesting.
No. Certainly not.
Yeah. So what's next for you?
Or maybe it would. Maybe just things on fire because everybody had butted heads too much because they're all the same person.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So you have this thesis coming. This is what's next for you. You're working on this grand thesis that you wouldn't tell us because no one's done it before.
No, it's... It's just that I'd rather talk about it in the context of what I'm aiming to do with my work before I talk. Like, if I came back later after I released a couple things, then I'd be happy to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, I need to reserve it until I have a real device to communicate that through.
You've got a card up your sleeve.
Yeah, I've got a couple cards up my sleeve right now, and I'm just kind of waiting.
I think
which is hard for me. I'm very impatient.
I think that's probably a good place to leave it in suspense.
She's got cards up her sleeve.
Thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for having me.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.